This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. If you appreciate local, original, in-depth news and entertainment programming, please support KDLL. Member donations help keep us on the air. And with changes to state and federal budgets, local support is more important than ever. You can visit our website, kdll.org, and click the donate button to make a one-time or recurring monthly donation. Give us a call at 283-8433 or drop a check in the mail to P.O. Box 2111 in Kenai. Local support helps make local public radio possible. Thanks.
Hello and welcome back to Drink on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here in KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. For our second interview today, we're going to be talking with Doug Hoag, owner-operator of Kenai River Brewing Company in Soldotna. So, hey, Doug, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. The issue at hand, the AMCO board's proposed regulation change to reinterpret the legislative intent to further restrict the activities permitted in brewery tasting rooms. Doesn't sound like a good idea to me, but what do you think?
No, I think, first off, the timing was very poor on even bringing something like this up in the forefront, because we've been working so hard with everybody involved, all the stakeholders, in rewriting Title IV. And then this throws a monkey wrench into things, and it gets people excited and you know, angry at each other for one reason or another, when it doesn't have to happen, because we've been working together and negotiating and getting things so that we can pass this legislation. And so this just kind of threw that monkey wrench in. I guess my biggest problem is that we've got all of these manufacturers that have been doing this for basically 13 years. The newer breweries have really built their business plans around what we've been able to do and what we've currently been doing. And it makes it very difficult to continue, you know, promoting commerce and helping out communities when all of a sudden they're saying, hey, we can't do that. In a time when we're seeing like a reduction in donations to our nonprofits, our community nonprofits, because of oil revenues diving down, here's a stream that is going well, and they're saying that we can't do that any longer, because if we can't promote something that we're doing for a nonprofit, we're not going to make the money to be able to make that donation. So that's kind of a big problem I have with it. The current director of AMCO is kind of what I'm seeing initiating all of this, and I guess I'm amiss on why it's happening.
Yeah, it does seem to me to be a solution in search of a problem. As you say, these have been the rules for 13 years now, and the change in 2006, it had a clear, dramatic impact on the successfulness of new breweries in Alaska. I mean, breweries in the state have almost quadrupled since this law was passed. This is what's allowing new breweries to hit profitability quickly and therefore begin expanding and things like that. And I'm, you know, as an interested party, but not somebody who has a dog directly in the fight, I look at it and I ask the question, who is being hurt by the current method of operation such that you feel that the director or whoever feels like, by golly, we really need to get in there and issue this new interpretation? Because, as you say, the breweries, at least in my experience, have done a really good job of adhering to both the spirit and the letter of what the law clearly states, which is, okay, you're going to limit your serving amount, you're going to limit your operating hours, and you're not going to have any live entertainment and no gaming. So that's what the law says. So why are we expanding that to say, oh, and therefore, if an artist wants to have a show at a brewery, somehow that's live entertainment? Or if an author like me wanted to do a book signing at a brewery, somehow that's live entertainment? I don't see it, and I don't think that was the legislator's intent either, but there seems to be this push to make it fit. Do you have any thoughts on why? What's the driving motivation behind this?
I honestly don't know why this would have even been presented at this time. Like I said, we've been working on this for many years on changing Title IV completely. We've come close a couple times, and I think that once we get over the, or maybe we won't get over some of the budget problems, but once we can move on to some new legislation, I think we have a lot of people on board. Almost every stakeholder that works in the alcohol industry is on board with writing and updating and modernizing our liquor laws in the state of Alaska, and it really has to happen. We're way behind the times compared to the rest of the lower 48, and it really doesn't need to be that way.
Yeah, that's, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, everywhere I've traveled, I'm struck with how limited and restricted our tasting rooms are compared to, you know, pick a state, Maine or Colorado or Washington State. They're, the brewery tasting rooms in those states don't labor under anything like the restrictions that Alaskan ones do. And once again, I fail to see what the social benefit behind this is. I can maybe see some economic benefit for certain of the players in the game. Like, once again, if you can hamstring your competition, then perhaps you can get some advantage from that. But that shouldn't be the motivator for the state. They should picking winners and losers in the game of alcohol sales.
The AMCO board, really, their writing regulation is to protect public health, safety, and welfare. And this update does none of that. In fact, right. I think the city of Soldotna has actually alluded to the fact that it's going to hurt our community if something like this went through.
Yeah, what's the old legal term? They ask who benefits?
Yeah.
You know, who benefits from this? What is the problem that's being addressed here? I haven't heard a big clamoring from the legislature that the board isn't doing its job. You know, it's not properly enforcing. And instead, I see the exact opposite with legislators stepping up and saying, no, this supposed legislative intent that you're interpreting doesn't exist. So right. If the legislature's not clamoring for it and the public's not clamoring for it, well, who is clamoring for this? Who thinks right. This is something that needs to be addressed? It would seem to me that there are a lot bigger problems that the board could be looking at. Just off the top of my head, I don't think they've done they used to do the enforcement checks where they would have people come without underage people and see if they could get served or buy alcohol and stuff like that. And I don't believe they've done that for years. But instead they're worried with this sort of stuff. So if you could alter the state laws, what would be your sort of priorities? I mean, I'm trying to look to the future here. Once we've revised Title IV and now, because my understanding, having studied it, part of the deal that was made for this revision was basically nobody was going to get anything in the sense of nobody was going to get an advantage over anybody else. No rules were going to get, those kind of rules were going to get significantly changed or anything. If you were looking ahead and you could change the rules, what would you like to see tasting rooms in Alaska be able to do that they can't do now?
I think Title IV has a really good process with the changes that they're looking at imposing. So if Title IV goes into law as it is written right now, it does some really nice updates and some nice changes. There are some other things that I think we need to look at modernizing with the manufacturing license, however. And the one thing I like before looking at changing those the manufacturer's piece is that manufacturers can start to tier their license. So if you did build your facility, or if you have a facility that can tier a license and add a restaurant eating place or something like that, then that's now available. That makes it really nice. There are pieces that allow more local control for like incorporated cities. So the cities can take a more active role in deciding how many licenses their area should have. So I think that makes it really nice. With specifically two manufacturers, I see no reason why tap rooms shouldn't be allowed to be open until 10. I think that's very reasonable. Some live entertainment, it can be limited. Maybe it's, you know, four times a year or six times a year doing some kind of special events license. So you could work around your anniversaries when you started. I think we'd all be in agreement with that. maybe even looking at this point at the pour restrictions. You know, 36 ounces, it works out really well for our business model, but I know there's some breweries that would like to see that changed a little bit. And I think distilleries, it kind of goes the same way. Just looking at some of the models in the lower 48 that are very successful, some of the states down there, I think we could start to emanate some of that and kind of increase commerce a little bit more for everybody in the state.
Yeah, that seems to me as a strong point. We're, as you mentioned earlier, we're in a bit of a fiscal crisis in the state, and I always hear our elected leaders talking about how we need to develop industry, and we need to develop business here, and we need to, you know, additional, we need to diversify. And looking around, you know, the alcohol industry, whether it's distilling or brewing, has been one of the few bright spots in the last few years in the state. And so to me, it would make sense that the state would want to promote that as opposed to think up ways to throw up roadblocks. I mean, I think the state showed a lot of vision in 2006 when they changed the law and they legalized tap rooms. And the states reaped the benefit from that over the last 13 years with, as I said, quadrupling the number of breweries who are all paying the second highest beer taxes in the country. But they are bringing in revenue to the state and sales taxes and to their local municipalities and things like that. And so that should be something the state should be sitting around thinking up ways to encourage and to promote. Instead, the goal of the board and the people charged with regulating this industry, they seem to spend their time sitting up thinking about how can we reinterpret the rules to make things more difficult, as opposed to what can we do to promote this industry. Their goal seems to be what can we do to restrain this industry.
It really is. And kind of my motto for the last number of years is that, so ANCO is a branch, or its umbrella department is the Department of Commerce. And ANCO has really just been looking at restricting commerce. It's like, and instead of working for the department that they're under, they seem to be kind of going in the opposite direction, which is really bizarre to me.
Well, hopefully we can get a course correction going here. It'll be interesting to see how this issue plays out, because I really haven't heard anybody other than the director, Erica McConnell, say anything in favor of this. So if we're going to go by the public reaction, the legislators' reaction, everybody's reaction, this idea seems to be a real turkey. But
there's not been one person that has come into the brewery or that has contacted me that thought that this was a good idea. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, shifting gears a little bit, what's going on at the brewery? What do you got coming out here in the next month or two? Or you got any new releases?
We do. So we've got, of course, October 1st is always our release of our Winter Warlock. It's our winter warmer that we make every year. So this year we did a little something different. We're going to release it specifically with just our standard Winter Warlock on October 1st. And then a little bit later in November, we've got some of the same batch that we were aging in oak. So then we'll have in November sometime, when we'll have an oak release of the Winter Warlock. So that'll be a fun little adventure. And we have two new cans that will be coming out really soon with Salteshi Trail Association. So I'm working in that series. We've got four beers in the series. Moose Gallop came out earlier in the summer, and then we moved into Salteshi Trail Ale. So that will be reintroduced in draft, and then it'll also be available in cans. And then we have a really cool beer, kind of like for the Cyclocross series. It's going to be coming out, boy, I'm going to say in about 2 weeks. And it is an oak imperial rye porter. So it's going to be both draft and in cans.
An oaked imperial rye porter.
Yes.
Okay.
And So it's coming in, I mean, just right at the, we didn't want to make it too big, because it is kind of meant to be like a recreational beer. But Cyclocross being as crazy as an activity as it is, so we're running about 8.2% is its alcohol content. It's still sitting on the oak right now, so we're going to leave it there for a little bit longer. Labels were just ordered. They'll be here early October, so shortly after that, we will have a really nice draft program with this beer and some cans kind of floating out there. the labels, I don't know if everybody has seen the Moose Gallop yet, but that was our first saltation can that we did. And all the artwork for these four cans are from Caitlin Bodma. Absolutely beautiful. Really, really nice. They're all colored theme-wise for the time of year that they're released. And these next two cans, the Saltation Trail Ale, which is a rye pale ale, and then the Porter that we have, just going to be beautiful cans. So it's pretty neat.
Sounds good. So what's happening out at your Kenai outpost, Kenai Joe's?
Out at Kenai Joe's, I know that the folks running the bar side of everything are kind of moving into a little bit of a football program. You know, it is football season, so that's kind of exciting. I'll fill you in on this one thing that they're going to do, but I've got to wait because it's not completely set up yet. But just be looking for something new and exciting happening on that front. And then we've got some events going on out there. I know they're doing a dart league. They've got business startup week. We're going to have a little social out there on November 21st. So that'll be a fun little get together and get people introduced out there. Live music has started most Friday nights, and they've been doing that too. So, yes, yeah, so some cool things, and yeah, trying to work on some new programming for Kenai Joe's.
Is the target for opening the big kitchen out there still perhaps the first of the year?
No, we're kind of making a little bit of a delayed change on that. So currently they're going to be running that just as a bar for a while, and we've got some new ideas on what we're going to do.
Okay. When you're ready to share them, let us know.
I will.
All righty. Well, hey, Doug, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. Really do appreciate it. And we're looking forward to heading over there on Tuesday and getting some of this year's new Winter Warlock.
Sounds great. Thanks, Bill.
All righty. Thank you. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Now we'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered how much fish we sell on the Kenai, or how much oil comes from here, what it's all worth, and what it all means? Well, we have too. That's why we created Econ 91.9, a weekly look at the Kenai Peninsula's economy, what makes it work, and who makes it work. Tune in each Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. for new numbers, emerging trends, and a bit of trivia. Econ 91.9, Friday mornings at 9 and again at 5, right here on KDLL, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Well, you heard the opinions from Mr. Ellis and from Mr. Hoag, and now I'm going to invoke radio host privilege number one and give you my unvarnished opinion, both on the latest rule interpretation proposal by the Alcohol Beverage Control Board and on Alaska's alcohol regulations in general. Please note that this is my personal opinion and does not necessarily reflect the editorial policy of KDLL. There's a quote from Ian Fleming's 007 novel, Goldfinger. Once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. This proposed regulation change is at least the third attempt in the last 2 years to hamstring Alaska's breweries. The first was the proposed 80-20 rule, which would have required breweries to sell at least 80% of their production to a distributor, meaning only 20% could be sold in their tap rooms. Then there was the amendment to reduce the amount of beer that could be sold from 36 ounces to 24 ounces per day, which would obviously have greatly impacted taproom sales. Inserted by the House Labor and Commerce Committee, two members of which were bar owners themselves, this poison pill killed the most recent effort to reform alcohol's Alaska laws. Now we have this attempt by the ABC board to further restrict taproom activities. Three attempts in 2 years spells enemy action, and in this case, the enemy is the bar owners of Alaska and their lobbying group, CHAR. Bar owners like to complain that brewery owners have an unfair advantage because they did not have to pay $250,000 for their license, like the bar owners did for their BDL. I'm here to call BS on that one. Brewing is an extremely capital-intensive business. All that gleaming stainless steel you see in the brew house costs money, a lot of money. While the brewers might not have to spend $250,000 to buy a piece of paper, they likely had to spend twice that on brewing equipment, equipment which supports manufacturing jobs, by the way, unlike a bar owner. I submit that if brewery tasting rooms are taking business away from bars, especially given all the limitations they are currently forced to operate under, the problem lies with the bars, not the breweries. If I can still whip you with one hand tied behind my back, the problem is with you, not with me. Given that they are apparently losing out in honest competition with the breweries, it's not surprising that the bar owners would try to use their political muscle to hamstring their competitors. Just like taxi companies fought to outlaw competition from Uber and Lyft, so too will many of the current BDL holders encourage state officials like Erica McConnell and legislators like Louise Stutes and Adam Wohl, both of whom are bar owners, to do their damnedest to hurt Alaska's breweries and distilleries via governmental means. The state of Alaska is suffering through some hard fiscal times right now. Our elected leaders are always droning on about how important economic development is and how much we need new industries in the state. The growth of distilling and brewing in Alaska have been one of the few unmitigated economic bright spots of the last few years. In any sort of rational world, we'd be talking about loosening the regulations governing these businesses, as we did back in 2006 when the state first allowed tap rooms. If we're worried about the social cost of alcohol, perhaps we could even talk about retiring some of our excessive number of BDL and package store licenses instead of grandfathering them forever. We should be celebrating and encouraging the replacement of old bars full of drunks with new brewery tap rooms filled with families and young professionals. Instead, our state employees spend their time thinking up new ways to limit and restrain them. In my opinion, the brewers of Alaska and those of us who enjoy drinking their products have been playing defense for far too long. I say it's high time we went on offense. Instead of just trying to defend what we have, let's see some proposals to liberalize the rules governing tasting rooms. While Char may have the lobbyists and the money, I'm confident that we have the people on our side. The bar owners fought Alaska's workplace smoking law tooth and nail for years, but in the end, they lost. When all is said and done, this state is still a democracy. Let's see a show of hands to determine who supports the bars and who supports the breweries. The first step in this process is making yourself heard on these proposed regulations. Send an email to amco.regs, that's amco.regs, at Alaska.gov, and tell them what you think. Then send one to your representative and senator and tell them the same thing. Bureaucrats and politicians both obey the lesser-known laws of thermodynamics. When they feel the heat, they see the light. In my opinion, it's time to turn up the heat on this subject. I'll be right back with our last segment. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Every year is a good year for jazz. Whether it's the Duke or Ella or someone newer to the scene, you'll find all your jazz favorites on A Good Year for Jazz with your host, Nathan. Each week, travel the calendar back to 1945, 59, or even 2015 to hear what was happening in the world of jazz. I'll meet you right here Monday night, 7 to 9, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to our final segment in this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. It's again time to revisit our old friend, Beer Gear. I've got two new items to tell you about this month, a book and a new phone app. Let's start with the app, which is named Brewee. That's B-R-E-W-E-E. Brewee is a mobile app that allows you to discover and explore craft breweries both in your area and across the country. It's essentially a navigator to help you find nearby craft breweries, which is especially useful if you travel a lot. The app is free to download, and once on your phone, you'll need to create a profile. After that, you can use it to find local breweries, keep track of the ones you've visited, as well as read and write reviews of them. I've given it a try, and it seems to work quite well. Currently, the only countries in its database are the U.S., the Czech Republic, and Slovenia. So it won't serve you very well overseas, but I expect their plans to expand the number of national databases to choose from. My spot check of breweries here in Alaska revealed no glaring errors, and the app has a feature that allows users to report new breweries, so it should help keep it up to date. In summary, if you travel and love craft beer, Brewy is a very useful addition to your stable of apps. Moving on to the second item, Brewers Publications has released a book entitled The Guide to Craft Beer. This is a pocket guide to understanding, appreciating, and exploring the vast community of craft beer. It's a resource for new and seasoned craft beer drinkers alike and includes beer style descriptions, the basics of beer, and recommended food pairings, as well as suggestions for an enhanced sensory experience. In 2019, more than 7,400 breweries are brewing beers in the U.S. that push the boundaries of the established 15 style families. The same small and independent breweries are also changing the way people think about beer. The Guide to Craft Beer illuminates how breweries are community leaders contributing to the community and driving change. The book is also small enough to easily fit in a purse or coat pocket and even has a tasting log with room to take notes on 75 different beers. With a cover price of only $12.95, this book makes a perfect gift for the beer lover in your life. Well, that's it for this month's show. Don't forget to make a public comment on the Alcohol Beverage Control Board's proposed regulations before October 4th by sending an email to amco.regs@alaska.gov. Our final quote of the month comes from the Canadian essayist Hugh Hood, who said, "Nothing ever tasted better than a cold beer on a beautiful afternoon with nothing to look forward to than more of the same." And on that thought, until next time, cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
IPAs, ales and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier, beer.